Good morning and welcome to the Green Country Gardener Program with our expert, Larry Glass. Stay tuned for a free hour of fun and free advice to make that garden and that lawn look great. The Green Country Gardener Program is brought to you by Green Thumb Nurseries and Greenhouses, Peter's True Value Hardware, Kelly Banks Tree Service, and United Rentals.
Welcome. You're listening to the Green Country Gardener on this Saturday morning. It is 8:08. Larry Glass joining us in the studio. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Garrett.
How's it going?
Pretty good, actually. It's been a rather a week, I should say.
Yeah, it's been an interesting week.
So the weather has made a change for the better. Mm-hmm. With the exception of precipitation. I don't know. What it is with you guys? Why you can't make it rain?
You know,
but you're going to have to get on the ball. It's getting really, really dry.
Larry, I don't know how many times we've talked about this, and I've tried switching this little button here, and it's just not working. I don't know what the deal is.
Oh, well, anyway.
Oh, wait, I need to check. It's this one. Sorry. Yes. I've been hitting the wrong button for about 2 weeks.
Yeah. I think if you turn that one a little bit more, maybe Tuesday it'll rain. So that leads... Leads us into what should we be doing in the yard right now at this point. Typically, it's time to start fertilizing the fescue grass.
Okay.
However, prior to fertilization, you must have an adequate moisture content in the soil. And most of the people who grow fescue grass kind of know that it needs a little bit more water than Bermuda grass, and some of them have watered their grass accordingly. And as long as your moisture content is good in the soil, you can go ahead and fertilize. However, we're running out of time.
Yes.
We're running out of time also to do the seeding of the fescue grass. And they couldn't get a tiller anywhere in town to either rent or borrow or buy, so they came to me and said, yeah, we'll put it in your truck. You can give it a shot. Well, that thing just bounced around everywhere.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
Ground just so hard. But anyway. And I know that for sure. We planted some trees this last week, and it's like they're planting them in stone. In some cases, we had to dig the hole halfway and then put some water in the hole and let it sit overnight.
And then go back at it?
It actually held water better than a swimming pool.
Huh.
And it didn't do a lot of good, but nonetheless, we got the hole dug.
So dry.
Yeah, why worry about a pond liner or a pool shell? Just...
Dig a hole,
and the water will sit there for 3 weeks. Anyway, that's our soil here. It tends to get packed up pretty good.
Welcome to Oklahoma.
and when it's dry, it actually, we were planting and doing the water. We put the water on the ground, and the water actually bounced off the ground from being so dry.
Dang. Yeah. We really do need some water then.
Yes. Yeah, so we do. We
Tuesday.
Could use, we had a whole lot of rain this spring, and it slowed everybody down. Nobody could do anything for all the rain. And now it got really hot. It got dry. Now we can't do anything. It's too dry. You can't break the ground.
I'm sensing some extremes here and a pattern.
So anyway, that's just the way it is here. So anyway, fertilizing the fescue grass is in the works right now. I wouldn't worry about the Bermuda grass at this point. It's kind of too late to do any fertilization on the Bermuda grass, so don't worry about that quite right now. It's going to go dormant here pretty soon. It's pretty smart stuff. It knows when to go dormant and stop growing and get ready for the winter. Mm-hmm. So if you do need to fertilize your Bermuda grass, use something like a 10-20-10, something fairly low in nitrogen. We don't want a lot of top growth on the Bermuda grass at this point. We do want good root and stolon growth at this point too.
Okay.
And that gets it ready for the winter. The reason why is you don't want a lot of want a lot of tender growth in your Bermuda grass at this point is a condition known as spring dead spot, where you have these mysterious round dead circles in your grass.
And you're like, oh, like what happened?
Flying saucers.
Like flying?
No.
Crop circles?
Crop circles. It's called spring dead spot.
Spring dead spot.
And the only way to cure that is to dig out the dead grass and some of the soil and sprig in some Bermuda grass from the surrounding area. Otherwise, it persists for a fairly long period of time into the spring, and you have these mysterious little crop circles in your yard. So don't fertilize the Bermuda grass at this point. Also, another thing in vogue right now are pre-emergence for spring weeds. Now, it's been kind of hot. Typically, it's been cool enough at this point in time where we have to be concerned about the spring weeds sprouting. However, it's not been cool enough for that to happen yet, and there's not been an adequate moisture. So this next week, when somebody turns the tap, it's going to get a little bit cooler. We are going to have some sprouting of henbit and dandelions and chickweed plants. They wait for the proper time to sprout. And there are some pre-emergents you can apply on there. We have one called Prodiamine at the nursery, which is very effective, very long-lasting, and comes in a great big old heavy bag. And prior to putting down an herbicide, be it Prodiamine or a pendimethalin or a Treflan or anything like that, you need to know your square footage. Mm-hmm. In other words, how much area do you have in your yard that you want to apply this pre-emergent? You can over-apply a pre-emergent, and it causes a kind of a sterility problem in the soil where nothing grows. When the Prodiamine first came out, or the pendimethalin, when that first came out, some people tended to over-apply, and they had nothing.
And they start scratching their head.
Well, no grass and no weeds, nothing.
More crop circles.
Not even crop circles. The whole yard was a crop circle. But anyway, so the proper application is very important. They have a recommended amount on each one. Each package perhaps has different percentages they put in there. And then it tells you on there how much to apply per 1,000 square feet and so on. Mm-hmm. So you divide your lawn area by 1,000 and then multiply that by the poundage needed and then put it in your spreader. And what I tell people to do is use a spreader that they have numbers for the spreaders on there, but know your square footage and know how many pounds you need to apply on that square footage. And if it's a 50-pound bag and you need 25 pounds or so, use half of it. You can get as accurate as you want. But set the spreader on a thinner setting, in other words, less material coming out, and apply over and over again until you get that proper amount put on there. Sometimes, there's differences also. How bumpy it is has an effect on how fast it comes through.
Right.
I know that when you hit a bump, you hit a root or something, or in the case of most of our soils, a rock, and the spreader stops for a second. And the stuff keeps flowing through, and then you get a higher concentration in a certain area. So, yes, it does happen.
It does. You're not wrong.
Not that personal experience.
Many different variables out there.
Yeah, and that's a practice I follow, is use less of it and apply it over more time, and that way you get a more uniform application of the stuff into your soil. So do it that way, and then water it in real good right away. And also, prior to applying these, you want to make sure the ground has been watered adequately. And then apply, and then follow the directions of whether or not you water it in.
Okay.
So that will let you know what to do. So it's always very important to follow those instructions and have some knowledge prior to doing this. Don't guess your square footage. You want to actually measure it.
Just dump the whole bag. No, just kidding.
Yeah, I bought a 50-pound bag on my 500-square-foot lawn, yeah.
I just dumped one
and
square
foot. Everything's dead. What happened?
I don't understand.
Now, you can actually measure your pace. And this is what I've done, is measure a typical pace and come up with a footage. You take about 10 steps, and you could... somehow mark it on the ground, or if you've got a sandy area or something where you can leave a footprint and just walk that out and then measure it and take the average of the pace, and that's and then you can multiply that by footage to get your to get how many linear feet you have, so you can come up with a pretty good idea of your square footage that way too.
It's
anyway,
basic math.
So, and then there are several type of herbicides. The Pendulum I mentioned, which is one I've used and had pretty good luck with. Barricade or Prodiamine is another one we use, and we've had good luck with that too. Tenacity is another one. You've probably heard about Tenacity.
Tenacity
is actually a kind of a natural type of herbicide. And what tenacity does is stop the photosynthetic process. Now, there are some grasses that are susceptible to this and some that are not susceptible to it. But Bermuda grass, in its live active stage or in its active stage, is susceptible to tenacity. And it'll stop the photosynthetic process and thereby kill the grass. So you use the tenacity after the Bermuda grass has gone dormant.
So you're saying it has the tenacity to kill some grasses?
Yeah, it will kill selective grasses. And this does a very good job of killing existing weeds. For instance, when you get the henbit and the chickweed and all that, you can use the tenacity at that point in time. And if you have some Poa annua, before the Bermuda grass comes up, you can use it on that as a post-emergent control. So it's a very good tool. However, you don't want to use it when the Bermuda grass is green and active because it'll bleach it out.
Right.
So that's kind of it with pre-emergence. Keep in mind that pre-emergence stop the weeds from growing. They don't kill the weeds. They stop new ones from coming up. So it will not stop your perennial weeds, such as your nutgrass, nutsedge, and all that. There are some post-emergent controls you can put on your nutsedge. Fusilade is one of them, and that will selectively remove it in amongst your Bermuda grass. The old-fashioned one is the what Kevin uses a lot.
Good old Kevin.
and it no longer, well, it is available in a 55 gallon drum, but but I wouldn't recommend it on a suburban lawn.
Probably not.
So anyway, so that's kind of the story with pre-emergence. It's prime time right now. But certain conditions must exist before you can apply it, and you have to have some knowledge of every area to do it. And they all work pretty well, you know, as far as control is concerned. So you just have to know how to apply it. And the instructions are on the bag, and it's rather lengthy. You look on the back of these bags, it's just so much verbiage on there that makes it difficult to really know what to do.
Right.
So... But typically on a bag, there's a chart with the square footage and how much to apply.
Okay? So read carefully.
Read very carefully. So, good time also right now to plant trees. We have a good selection of red maples out there. Red maple later on is the tree of the week. But anyway, and we have some oak trees also. I rather like the red oak, the northern red oak. They do pretty well here. So, we have some of those too. Good fall color for shrubs. We have a great selection of dwarf nandinas right now. We managed to corner the market on dwarf nandinas.
They're all ours.
We've got some. Yay. So anyway, I like them for their winter color. They're really beautiful and red in the wintertime. Of course, we have pansies, cabbage, and kale. Flowering cabbage and flowering kale. They're edible plants. Put them in the landscape. You can get on your hands and knees and munch on your landscape if you want, but anyway, they're pretty cool plants too. Good fall color, good winter color.
We do have a caller on the line.
Okay, put them on.
Good morning. How can we help you? You're in the Green Country Gardener.
Hey, good morning. This is Ike, and I was wondering. I always hear Larry refer to the nursery, but we have several here in town, and was just wondering what nursery is he at?
That's Green Thumb Nursery.
All right. Great. Thank you.
All righty. Thanks, Al. Oh, well. Anyway, at Green Thumb Nursery, we have a great selection of pansies, too. And actually, this week, we've sold a lot of pansies. And I'm really surprised they're able to bloom and prosper out in the heat. Typically, they kind of shy away from the heat. But it's been, what was it, about 4,000 or 5,000 degrees early this week.
Earlier this week is actually pretty...
I don't know. The parking lot melted, but nonetheless, yeah. It was hot.
It definitely... we've been through several seasons this past week.
Yeah. So they're doing okay. You have to water them like five times a day on those benches because you have moving air above and below. So we have to be very careful about the watering, not letting them get dried out. So anyway, we've got the pansies, flowering cabbage, and flowering kale. And when you get a flowering kale, at this point, they look kind of unpromising.
Right.
But that typically does their thing when it gets cooler. They change these brilliant reds and orange, not oranges, but purples, and a white one too, when the temperature cools down. And the color persists throughout the winter, provided you give it some irrigation, it'll make it through the winter. So, and the chrysanthemums, we have some that are as big around as you can reach, and we've sold a lot of those. People really like those great big mums. And we get them in where they've not been pushed to bloom early. So they'll be in bloom at the proper time when it gets cooler and so on. They're a tight bud right now, some of them. At this point, they just haven't quite opened yet, which is actually prime for mums right now. You really don't want to get one that's open at this point, because when the time comes for them to show off their plumage, it will be over with.
Right.
So you want to get them in tight bud at this point. So we do have some really nice-looking mums over there, too.
We're speaking with Larry Glass, the man with the emerald thumb, here on the Green Country Gardener. It's 8:24. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Tim from United Reynolds. I literally had a 73-year-old lady. She came in and wanted to rent one of these track hoes. And she said, do you have one that a lady can operate? A lot of this equipment, it's like a video game. It's hand-eye coordination. This lady came in, rented this track hoe, and dug a trench in front of her house for a French drain that she said she had been trying to get her husband to do for years. We're up here on the southeast corner of Highway 60 and 75, 3801 Nowa. Water Road, United Reynolds.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is getting busy and getting ready for fall. Just in time for fall planting, you'll find new shipments of pansies, mums, and flowering kale. And they also have fall arrivals of trees and shrubs. And right now is a great time to sow fescue seed and apply pre-emergent for winter weeds. Come see what's new at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5 Sunday.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house, and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
Listening to the radio, driving in your car. Radio gets results.
This is Laura Walton with Martha's Task. We love Bartlesville Radio. Every time we advertise, we always have a big boost in business as radio gets results.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener. I'm Garrett Giles. Joining us is Larry Glass. If you have any questions, you can reach us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. And Larry, what can you tell us about red maples?
Red maple, that's our tree of the week. Red maple or Acer rubrum. There's several varieties of the red maple, and they all have different tendencies, but we'll talk about generically about the red maple at this point. It's hardy plumb up to zone 3. And plumb all the way down to zone 9. So it's it can live in a rather wide range of environments. So it is, of course, deciduous, meaning its leaves turn red and drop off in the fall. Simple. It's moderate to rapid growing. It requires sun to shade in a wide range of soil types. So I was at a house yesterday. And the soil type in this town can range from sandstony rock to limestony rock to clay within a block.
<It's> so dynamic.
So, yeah, it's very different in here. I guess there's a lot of stirring going on back in the old times, I guess. The dinosaurs were pushing all this dirt around or something. I don't know what it is, but anyway. So we do have a wide range of soil types. That's probably why this tree succeeds in our town pretty well. It has a kind of a medium texture as far as appearance is concerned from a distance. It's not really coarse like a big mulberry or magnolia tree. It's not really fine like a willow tree. It's kind of a medium texture.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pyramidal growth habit when young. The branches ascend, which is good. Uh-huh. You got it right. With kind of an irregular rounded crown. And the good thing about it having ascending branches is that you have a better chance of being able to get grass grow underneath it.
Okay.
So it's good for that too. Typically anywhere from 40 to 60 feet tall.
It's pretty tall.
Yeah, that's pretty tall. I'll be about as tall as I am.
About as tall, yeah.
And it gets 25 to 45 feet wide. And there are actually different configurations of the maple trees too. There's some that are somewhat fastigiated. So they're very narrow and upright, in other words. Fastigiate is a name term to describe trees that are upright.
Right.
And they're parallels. There's oaks and elms and also that are narrow and upright too. Okay, put them on.
Good morning on the Green Country Gardener.
Yes, this is Dan Houston. We're having a swap meet in Caney, Kansas.
Cool.
At 101 East 4th, Caney, Kansas. We're going to try to have it every other weekend from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Excuse me, sir. Do you have any questions for the Green Country Gardener Show? We could get you on consumer calls later if you want to call around 9 o'clock.
Okay. Can I call around 9 o'clock and put that out on air?
Yes, sir.
All righty, buddy. Thank you.
No problem. You have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye. We do have another caller on the line. Good morning on the Green Country Gardener.
I have a nocturnal pest that's digging up plugs of my Bermuda along the sidewalk.
Oh, my.
And he's got, they're about 6 inches apart. And he's got little teeny tiny footprints, and he is all over. And would that be a possum or an armadillo?
Probably an armadillo, more than likely.
So how can I prevent that anyway?
Well, armadillos are quite dumb, so so there's not much that'll scare it. But no, not really. If it's the case of an armadillo, you need to find their where they hide out during the day, and build what you call a blind trap to trap the little critters. If it's a possum, you can probably use a live animal trap to catch it too, perhaps. But I don't know, other than perhaps standing outside with a water hose.
Maybe. Okay, at midnight. It does this during the night.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So
well,
they are kind of hard
so
to control.
There's nothing to put down that I could, granules or anything that would prevent them from doing
We do have some repelling granules at Green Thumb Nursery. We have some. They do a pretty good job of repelling them.
Okay. Well, I was coming in anyway, so I will ask for that.
Yeah, it's over there on the north wall of the building there, so you'll be
okay.
able to find some.
Thank you so much.
All righty. Thank you for calling.
Bye.
If you have any questions for Larry Glass about trees, veggies, the lawn, anything like that for the Green Country Gardener Program.
Or critters, I guess.
Or critters. You can reach us at 918-336-1400 or 1-800-749-5936. And, of course, Larry, you were talking about
the red maple.
The red maple.
It gets 40 to 60 feet tall, 25 to 45 feet wide. The leaf is anywhere from 2 to 5 inches. So that's quite a range in size, actually. It's a simple leaf. In other words, it's not compound. With 3 to 5 lobes on the leaf. A lobe is that thing that sticks out on the leaf. It's oak trees have lobes on them.
Mm-hmm.
And maple trees have lobes on them also, although they're configured a little differently, but they have lobes on them also. And often a triangular shape, a variety of fall color from tree to tree, from yellow to yellow green to orange to red, depending on the variety and the conditions. Now, The flower on it is insignificant, but in the spring, if we have the right temperature, they turn almost reddish in color, really, in the spring with flowers. Kind of attractive, really. You do want a good hard freeze, though, when they're in bloom, so you don't have all these little turtlygeeks spinning around.
Right.
And it has dense clusters of turtlygeek seeds in the spring. So that's probably the only drawback, really, the red maple, perhaps. Are the little offspring that come up all over the yard. I have some in my pots that are coming up there. Actually, they've grown very well this year.
Good.
So I've got some red maples that are, well, 2 feet tall.
They're about half my size now.
Really quite.
Or really, a third of my size.
Yeah, so, yeah, so. A third would be better. But, yeah. But anyway, they're really quite strong and healthy in my pots with my coleus and impatiens and whatnot. So so I might decide to perhaps put them in a pot and offer them for sale, maybe. I don't know.
At the nursery.
Yeah, anyway. They naturally occur on low wet sites. That's where they're primarily formed. Some people call them a swamp maple, the red maple, because they can grow in swampy areas.
Because they can grow anywhere.
This plant is extremely adaptable, though. I have some in my yard growing in solid rock.
Okay.
On Mars, if you will. Yeah.
You live on Mars?
Yes, literally.
What's that like?
No, it's hard. You dig a hole in the ground and you hit rock. So, and the roots are very shallow, and every year the roots get into my annual beds, and I have to dig out the roots every spring so I can plant my annuals. So they are better. The root system can be a little bit invasive on your beds, making it difficult to plant some flowers and things here and there. So, but other than that, they're a really good tree for the durability. Pests on the red maple, we've experienced a significant amount of borer damage on the red maples. Mm-hmm. And interestingly though, the borers typically occur on the southwest side of the tree.
Hmm.
So,
because why is that?
It's incrementally warmer there in the wintertime. So the borer insect has developed an adaptive strategy to typically go on the southwest side. They have this little compass they carry with them. They know it.
Lead the way to the heat.
So anyway, that's typically. And the borer damage is kind of easy to spot. You see little holes in the tree and maybe some seepage coming out. And what the borer does is it bores a pathway between the bark and the wood and the phloem layer. The phloem layer is a layer of tissue that generates wood on one side and bark on the other side. It also transmits sugars generated by the leaves down to the roots for storage.
Okay.
And that's why the borer really likes it, because it really does like maple syrup.
I like maple syrup. Is
so, but we don't get that here. But anyway, so the borers are the primary pest of maple trees. And if you see, for instance, on your typically a trunk is round on a maple tree, and if you see a flat spot, typically on the southwest side of the tree, you rub your hands on it with your fingernails upside down and listen for hollow sound. And that's where the borers are down below there.
Okay.
It can cause damage to the point where the tree is completely girdled and it'll kill the tree. So you want to be very careful with be observant with these trees also.
Right.
And a way to prevent borers, the imidacloprid is very effective as a borer control. If you're planting some new maple trees, transplanting is somewhat of a trauma to a tree, actually, when you change the environment like that. And it tends to be a little bit slow at developing for a while. And that's when the borers go in, because typically the sugar is higher concentrated on the phloem layer at that point. And they really, really like that stuff.
Right.
So you might want to consider, if you do have a lot of other trees in the area, typically oaks and maples, you might want to consider using some imidacloprid when you plant that to help borer damage from occurring. We got a caller?
We do have a caller,
okay.
And we'll take a break. Good morning. You were on the Green Country Gardener. How can we help you?
Yes. Regarding the red maple.
Yes.
It says it goes into a lot of different soils.
Yes.
But does the soil type affect the ultimate size that red maple is going to get?
Yes. The poorer and shallower the soil, the smaller the tree is going to be.
So so if it's in like this, you mentioned this more swampy type, in the where the wet soil, it's going to get to like its full 60-foot size? Is that what you're saying?
It'll get rather large. I have some at my house that are over 40 years old, and they're pretty good size, but they're not as big as, say, the ones down the street that have better soil.
Okay, and that's what true.
The lifespan?
Yes.
Oh, 60 to 100 years.
That's here in Oklahoma, Bartlesville?
Yeah.
Okay. And I have another question about trees. I've noticed in some places, particularly when I was out in California, but I've kind of noticed around Bartlesville too, it seems like the trees that are next to the highway or the road all seem to have bark that's exfoliating. Are they just trees that have exfoliating bark, or does the fact that they are in a high traffic area?
Well, exfoliating bark can vary depending on the species of tree it is.
Right.
So exfoliating bark on a maple tree is an unusual circumstance that it could indicate some kind of problems. However, on, say, an elm tree, or a silver maple, for instance. Silver maples are more common on the roadsides than red maples. And silver maples have a vertically associated bark that does tend to exfoliate as the tree grows out.
Oh, okay. So that's just a characteristic of the tree and nothing to do with the traffic that's
by. No, not really. And that's the tree you're seeing is more than likely a silver maple.
Silver maple.
They tend to grow in wild, if you will, in the areas. And they had that characteristic of a vertically striated bark that tends to exfoliate. And exfoliation can occur when we have a rather wet spring, which we did have, because the tree grew rather quickly. I see a lot of elm trees around, the Chinese elms. The bark has just popped off sort of prematurely. Yeah. The bark doesn't expand. As the tree grows, the bark just kind of pops off and it generates new bark. So as also in the case of the Chinese elm, as it matures, it doesn't have that corky bark on it. It has a rather smooth, mottled-looking bark to it as it gets older.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then I have another question that's nothing to do with trees. We had a ring of azaleas, and the front part of the ring has are the small size azalea plants, but one of them died this past year, and so wanted to know when should I just take it out and will the azaleas move into that space, or do I need to replace it? And when is a good time to replace it?
Well, the azaleas typically will grow somewhat broad and low over time. So if they were, 3 feet apart and you have a 6-foot span, they'll probably fill in okay. How far is the spacing? How far apart are they planted?
Not very far apart, but they're very small. I'd say they are probably only, pretty close together. I'd say, it's hard to tell. Maybe, but I would say probably about 3 feet apart.
Okay, 3 feet apart, yeah. They will grow about themselves anywhere from 3 to 5 feet wide. So you will ultimately get a fill-in where the one was taken out.
So okay, the ones in the back are different. They're growing quite, bigger.
Uh-huh.
And so if I don't want those to come forward, which seems, in other words, they seem to be more vigorous.
Right. That sounds to me like you might have some variation in the soil down below.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, would you recommend then, actually, if I don't want that change, to put the ones that match the ones in the front to actually replace that one, rather than wait to see what happens?
Well, it's an individual thing. If you do want to replace it, I would recommend using a significant amount of peat moss in the soil.
Okay.
In the new ones, perhaps. And if you do have a variable growth habit on the plants, and as far as shade is concerned, it's all similar. The only variable in the equation is what's down below the ground. and perhaps the preparation wasn't done uniformly all the way around.
Oh, okay. That sounds definitely possible. So when would, if I do replace, okay, if I replace it, when would be the time to replace it?
Azalea is traditionally a very hardy plant. They do quite well here. The ones that are for sale here are quite hardy, and they can be planted most any time. The important thing is to ensure in the wintertime that they're mulched over real well, number one. And number two, make sure they're irrigated going into the winter and during the winter, too. Don't neglect them in the wintertime, and they should do okay being planted any time like that.
So if I were to plant one, say, this month, mm-hmm. It would be fine through the winter?
Should be, yeah. We plant them all year round, and typically don't have any problems with them.
And they'll go ahead and bloom in the spring?
Uh-huh. Yeah, the azaleas have set their blooms already. If you look real closely, they have flower buds on the tips of all the branches.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Larry.
All right. Thank you for calling.
And Larry, we do need to take a break, so we'll be right back with the Green Country Gardener.
Building healthy relationships is often a difficult, lifelong process, but you can find health and hope in just 1 minute. Focus on the Family Minute is sound marriage, parenting, and personal growth advice from today's leading experts, plus encouragement and insight from your favorite authors and Christian personalities. Focus on the Family Minute. It could change your day, your perspective, maybe even your life.
Brought to you by Grace Community Church, weekday mornings at 740 and 1400 K1.
You've heard it said, I saw it on the radio.
Well, that's true.
But now the radio can be your computer,
your smartphone,
tablet, or any internet-connected device.
Go to BartlesvilleRadio.com and click on the Listen Now button in the upper right-hand corner.
And you won't miss a minute of news, sports, or entertainment.
You can take us with you anywhere in the world.
We're AM 1400, FM 93.3, and FM 95.1. K1, the one you trust, and your constant online companion.
Peter's True Value and Dewey September bargains of the month include Prestone Antifreeze 1 gallon jug for $10.99. Keep insects at bay with Ortho 1 gallon ready to use indoor insect barrier. Regular price $17.99. At the register price $14.99 with instant in store rebate of $3. For handyman and honeydew projects, pick up a 50 piece Black and Decker cordless drill and tool set for just $49.99. Stock up and save at Peter's True Value in Dewey.
How many times have you asked yourself, what's the forecast for tomorrow? Just call the Weatherline Forecast Service, 918-336-2900, and find out. You get the forecast, plus the time and temperature from the studios of News Talk 1400 K1. We update the Weatherline as our forecast changes, so you're always up to date. Put that number in your phone and call 918-336-2900.
Back with the Green Country Gardener program, talked a lot about red maples this morning. Larry, what's the science behind the fall colors?
The bright red and purple colors come from anthocyanin.
Anthocyanin,
pigments.
Did I say that right?
These are potent antioxidants common in many plants, for example, beets and red apples and purple grapes, and even red wine.
Ooh.
And flowers like violets and hyacinths. I guess since the name anthocyanin and hyacinths. In some leaves, like maple leaves, these pigments are formed in the autumn from trapped glucose. Glucose. And so that's kind of how it works, is antioxidants in there and then the trapped glucose. The trees, when the fall comes, they form what is called, which is present in the leaf already, the abscission layer. And it turns corky, and it prevents the absorption of stuff from the leaves. And these anthocyanins are trapped in there with the glucose, and it causes a change in the chlorophyll and makes it red or yellow or whatever the colors may be. And sometimes some people think that maybe it helps keep their leaves on a little bit longer. And the pigments actually do help protect the leaves from the sun. I mean, you're out there in the sun all day long without any sunscreen. So they got to have some kind of protection, and that's what these are for, really. And they also lower the freezing point a little bit, giving some frost protection. And the leaves remain on the tree longer, and more sugars, nitrogen, and other values are removed before the leaves fall. So it's kind of interesting science behind that. So
that's what makes
that's what makes the leaves red. And there's a function of the available moisture at the time, the temperature, and so on. And the length of day also stimulates this this abscission layer to close up, prevent the stuff from coming into the roots. So they also say perhaps the anthocyanins worked as almost like a pre-emergent in the ground as the leaves fall to keep other species from coming up. So there's all kinds of theories behind this stuff, but who knows?
Well, people know the science behind it now and why everything looks so pretty in the fall.
Right.
It's 8:49. You're listening to the Green Country Gardener program. We're talking to Larry Glass, the man with the emerald thumb from Green Thumb Nursery. We'll have more from him here in just a little bit. We'll take another break.
Okay.
Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is getting busy and getting ready for fall. Just in time for fall planting, you'll find new shipments of pansies, mums, and flowering kale. And they also have fall arrivals of trees and shrubs. And right now is a great time to sow fescue seed and apply pre-emergent for winter weeds. Come see what's new at Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nowata Road. Open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5 Sunday.
Food is the subject on the Dining Guides between 11 and noon Monday through Friday on sister stations 100.1 KYFM and 104.9 FM KREG. Learn about Wheezy's Cafe, Szechuan Chinese Restaurant, Speedy Drinks, and KFC, all in Bartlesville, CV's in Dewey, and Copan Restaurant and Truck Stop. The Dining Guides on 100.1 KYFM and 104.9 KREG.
Who do I call to get my trees trimmed?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
Who can grind up these stumps in my yard?
Kelly Banks Tree Service.
There's a dead tree right by my house and I'm nervous it might fall.
Well, you better call Kelly Banks Tree Service.
What's that number?
It's 918-335-7000. It's 918-335-7000.
Call them today for your tree trimming, stump grinding, and tree removal needs.
That's 918-335-7000. 918-335-7000.
If you work or live in the downtown area and are experiencing difficulty at times to find a place to park, worry no more. There is downtown parking available at 2nd and Osage that's convenient to downtown businesses and apartments. For more information and monthly rates, call 336-1001. That's 336-1001.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener. Larry Glass in the studio with us. We do have a caller on the line. Good morning. How can we help you?
Yes, I'm calling back because you mentioned the fall color. And, Larry, one thing you mentioned was that it's a function of the temperature and the moisture in the soil.
It has a lot
I wanted to find out, you know, like we haven't got a lot of rain lately, but is there something the homeowner can do to improve their fall color or to influence it?
Yeah.
I mean, we can't.
Perhaps you might want to relocate to a more northern latitude. No.
What about watering?
If you keep your lawn well watered, it should be okay. You don't have to go overboard with that. I would say at this point in time, if you have some nice looking green grass in your yard, you should have some really good fall color.
Okay. So, is there a timing to when you need to be able to, when it needs the water to get that fall color?
That I don't know for sure, but going into the fall right now, late in the summer, you want to make sure that you have some adequate moisture, and it should help it.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty. Thanks for calling. Sometimes, actually, when it's dry, the color's better. It just depends on the temperature, too. And we've not had a cool temperature at this point. So I think all the tour buses are going to be going elsewhere this year.
Probably.
For the fall color.
Canada, eh?
So, anyway.
Hey, Larry, I think we'll take our fourth and final break here.
Okay.
We'll be right back.
Very
it's,
good.
It's 8:53.
The original Waldorf Astoria Hotel on Fifth Avenue in New York City was built in 1893. Constructed in the German Renaissance style, the hotel had 450 guest rooms and another 100 rooms for staff and servants. After merging with their next-door neighbor, the Astoria Hotel, in 1897, the hotel had 1,300 rooms, making it the largest hotel in the world at the time. The Empire Room at the hotel was the largest and most lavishly decorated room in the Waldorf and quickly became one of the finest restaurants in New York City. From the beginning, the Waldorf was the must-stay place for foreign dignitaries from around the world. Some of those guests were the leaders of China, the Prince of Siam, the Grand Duchess of Russia, and many others. Andrew Carnegie was a regular guest at the hotel, and the Waldorf Astoria Bar became a favorite haunt from many of the financial elite such as Diamond Jim Brady, Buffalo Bill Cody, and Bat Masterson. In short, anyone who was anyone in the world of politics, society, business, or entertainment wanted to be seen at the Waldorf. It truly was the world's hotel. Following the tragic sinking of the Titanic, the Waldorf Hotel was the official site for the inquiry that was performed by the United States Senate into the disaster. With this backdrop, our very own Frank Phillips was a major player at the Waldorf. In 1929, a private corporation was formed by Uncle Frank, and he became part owner of the Waldorf. Later that year, they sold the buildings and the land to a corporation named Empire State, Inc. Their plan was to demolish the hotel, which they did, and build the Empire State Building in that location. In July of 1929, prior to the demolition, Frank Phillips inspected the hotel and paid particular attention to four handsome chandeliers which hung in the tap room of the hotel. When the hotel was gutted in preparation for the demolition, Frank was given those ornate lights. He promptly shipped them to Oklahoma and had them hung in the great living room of the Woolerock Lodge, where they illuminated family gatherings, business meetings, cocktail parties, poker games, and many other social events. Whenever asked by guests about the lights, Frank liked to joke and say they were all that he got out of his investment, calling them his million-dollar chandeliers and declaring them the most expensive in the country. The magic of New York City and the Waldorf Astoria from 1893 is still part of the lodge today and the wonderful history of Woolerock. That same magic still exists. Welcome home to Woolerock.
Welcome back to the Green Country Gardener. I'm Garrett Giles, Larry Glass, and with us today, 8:56. Larry, what's happening at the nursery?
Hey, at the nursery, as I mentioned earlier, we have flowering kale and cabbage, and pansies exhibiting some really good color right now. If you do have some annuals in your bed and you want to integrate some pansies in there, you can perhaps maybe thin out some of your annuals a little bit and put some pansies in between so you still have color. Some people just go in and systematically remove their annuals and put in their pansies, but you can just make room for them.
Right.
And then there's a fairly long window of time in which we can plant pansies at this point, so you don't have to do it all at once. So
just take your time.
One of these days it'll get cold enough, it'll freeze, typically around Halloween, so you got about 30 days before it gets really cold. Now, crazy. After that point, it's getting a little bit late to try to establish the pansies because the ground's getting cooler typically at that point, and the water is kind of more available, but it's getting cooler, and they don't grow and develop as well in a cooler climate as they do right now. So make some room for them. I plan on doing that sometime soon with my beds up front. Usually I'm about 3 months behind schedule, Larry.
Aren't we all, Larry?
But my house is on the garden tour this coming spring, so I got to have some color on it, so I need to plant some pansies real soon. So anyway, that's one thing you can do right now. Also, the kale and cabbage is very colorful in the winter. I like to put them kind of by the front door, and you don't want to plant a lot of them, really. You don't need a lot of them because they're very impressive alone as they are. So consider putting some of those in the landscape also. Good time also to plant a few shrubs and things. We have a great selection of shrubs and trees and abelias and whatnot at the nursery. So a good time right now for that. It's going to get cooler. This week looks promising after tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Looks really, really nice. With a chance of rain coming later on in the week, too, it looks like.
Could be a week full of rain after Monday.
Finally, I can dig a hole in the ground without a jackhammer. I don't know how many shovels I've broken this last month.
Were you keeping them sharp?
Yes, you have to.
Yes, always have to.
But anyway, so that's kind of going on, too. So, yeah, I know I'm all cut up over here from digging.
It's a tough environment out there.
Yeah, so, anyway, crepe myrtles, too. If you want to establish some crepe myrtles, some people have planted some. You want to make sure they're mulched real well going into the winter. And watch the weather forecast very carefully on your crepe myrtles. This last winter, we got kind of caught with our guard down. And it got really, really cold, and it was a little bit on the dry side.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the crepe myrtles and a lot of the other shrubs suffered a little bit from that. So having an awareness of what's happening with the weather coming up. And, you know, you don't need to rely on your irrigation system to water these plants. You can go out there with a hose and water them rather heavily and specifically. It just takes a few minutes. And it can save you a lot of effort and time, whatever. Anyway, come by the nursery and check us out. We got all kinds of stuff going on. And into the fall, some color coming on with the pansies and the kale. A great selection of house plants and wind chimes, too. That's one thing we have plenty of around here is wind and hot air, obviously. But anyway, keep that shovel sharp. We will see you next week.
American Heritage Bank, now serving the Osage.